Fox stepping, pushing ahead to Rodman. Rodman, the one-touch, Shaedon Shaw! 3-0 United States! And the youth movement leading the way tonight here in Southern California.
What is good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle, and I'm back hosting. Hello, everyone. And I'm here with my co-host, Courtney Stith. Courtney, how are you?
I'm living in Cat Wonderland.
Listen, we're going to get to it. I just want y'all to understand that, like, we're going to do our best to save it till the end because y'all know we do Heated and Hyped. So, you know, spoiler alert. It's going to be both our heights. Okay. We're going to get to it. But I don't want to give it away. Aside from that, how are you?
I mean, honestly, that's like my number one emotion. Like, I'm not joking. Like, I'm just, if anyone follows me on Instagram, I'm just like posting like all the clips, all, like everything that Chelsea's posting, everything that Kat is posting. I'm just like, I want to live here in this moment. And like, literally, as soon as I saw that happening, I was like, I don't care what happens to the US Open session. I don't care what happens to the W Gold Cup. I was like, I'm living here in this one moment. But even despite the W Gold Cup being, I think as you put in our show notes, the greatest tournament of all time.
Sure is.
I am a little bit excited that it is winding down because I've been producing so many shows. If you've watched any of CBS Sports' U.S. Women's National Team coverage in and around games, that has been yours truly. And while I'm very proud of the coverage, it's also taken over my life and my sleep schedule is fully messed up. I sleep from like anywhere from 2 to 4 o'clock in the morning to like 10. Sometimes I'll go to bed at 4 and wake up at like 11. Which is, like, really not good for your body to be on that sleep schedule. So I'm...
It is not. That was, like, me at college, but I was at college.
Yeah, I mean, in college, you can also take a nap in the middle of the day and don't have to, like... You make big decisions, like, what, once every several weeks? Not like, basically once every 48 hours. So, while the tournament has been a lot of fun, I actually am a little bit excited that it's winding down and then having the really fun... activity of trying to correct my sleep schedule.
Yeah, that part's going to be a little bit brutal. I will say that that college sleep schedule is no joke, and that is also why I graduated in 5 years and not 4. Just to give y'all a window into how I rolled in college.
I was like, that 4 to 10, if you go to bed anything later than like 2 o'clock in the morning, it's just like, I can't be a fully functioning human the next day. But on U.S. Women's National Team nights, I was up bright and early at 8:45 a.m. for attacking the third. And so it was like, did Courtney get 4 hours of sleep last night? Maybe a little bit. Is she dying right now? Do you look at her and you see, doesn't have a thought behind those eyes? Also me.
I mean, well, the good news is we got a podcast where we're going to talk about a lot of the Gold Cup. So I'm sorry to drag you right back into it. And we're going to ask for your thoughts. So, you know, it's going to be all good. I know you have them. We were talking a little before the pod, so it's going to be fun.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about the games. They temporarily left my mind, and then I had to, like, I watched two highlights, and I was like, oh, all my thoughts are coming back. Oh, yes, yes, the thoughts I did, in fact, have. I have a lot of feelings about Canada, Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know what? Great segue. But before we get to that, let's read a review. Love when y'all rate and review the podcast. We've been getting a few reviews coming in recently, and thank y'all. If you're not one of them, the hell you doing? Let's go. But we have this review called Y'all Are Everywhere, KG___19. Says, I'm so grateful I found the pod right before the World Cup and have loved listening to y'all since. I'm doing a presentation in a college course on if the NWSL draft should exist. In parentheses, it shouldn't. And I was reading a Gaming Society RIP article that talks about doing a signing day instead. And I said out loud, is this Andre? And scrolled up to find Andre had in fact written it. Appreciate everything y'all do. Hashtag abolish the draft. RIP Gaming Society. But thank you for, I'm glad, I, honestly, given the way media has gone, I'm actually glad that webpage is still like alive and people can access it. I downloaded all my work, so I have a record of it, but I didn't know the URLs were still working. So good to know. And thanks for the review.
Thank you for the review. Can you send me the syllabus? Honestly, no. Like, look, I love reading, like, coursework and stuff like that. And reading, like, especially if it's something, like, I care about, I eat it all up. I'm like, give it to me. Please send me this a syllabus. Send us a syllabi, maybe. I don't know if Andre wants it. I'm curious. Because a college course on if that WSL draft should exist sounds fascinating. Like, I would love to take that as a college student. Or when I was a college student. I'm not currently a college student. So yes, please send that because I would really like to read it and I'll probably, maybe it'll be a fun summer activity or something.
I will say I am super interested in the presentation. So like, yeah, if you don't mind, if you can, drop it to us because it sounds fun. Okay. Again, thank you again for the review. Rate, review, 5 stars, all that good stuff. Everything that all those podcasters, if you listen to other podcasts, tell you to do. They say it for a reason, so we're going to say the same thing, but in fewer words, because we got stuff to talk about, y'all, in this episode. W Gold Cup. Listen, the greatest tournament that has ever existed. Arnold Clark took 1 year off, and the king lost the crown. The W Gold Cup has been fun
you're
as
gonna
hell. You're
going to get people in your mentions. You're going to get people in both of our mentions.
I am, but I don't care. We have the games. We have the goals to back it up. We don't quite have Millie Brighton and Alexia Pateas sharing a golden boot just yet, but we will see what happens, what other chaotic stuff can happen. But yeah, the W Gold Cup has been like incredibly awesome. And then, of course, sneak preview. We're going to talk about Cat being back because we both real hype about that. Courtney, before we get to the first round of quarterfinal games to review, do you have anything else to add?
Nope.
All right, let's do it. First game, Canada 1, Costa Rica 0. Listen, all I'm going to say is I apologize, Costa Rica. I was actually mad. Y'all won that drawing of lots, the draw that we talked about in the last episode. I was a little frustrated because I had seen the performances and I'd seen your movies in this tournament. And I was like, I don't know how good this is going to be. And also Canada wrecked y'all before. So I was not expecting this to be a great game. But yo, the only quarterfinal to go into extra time, and Costa Rica had it. If it wasn't for Kaylin Sheridan, Costa Rica would have done it.
I know Costa Rica was, I can't lie, I was feeling a bit of the same way. Because also I was like, just like, it's not even, I was like more curious of like a Canada-Puerto Rico matchup. I was like, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I want to see it. But then honestly, Costa Rica, like, it was one of those games where there are, like, two competing storylines. I mean, to be fair, most games are two competing storylines. But I feel like this one was really, like, Canada, like, can Canada score? And it was also, like, Costa Rica's defending with their lives, but also somehow still giving away a ton of chances while having a great goalkeeper performance, but also giving away, like, a lot of chances, and Canada just quite simply can't finish them. I will say, having watched, like, their final group stage match compared to this match, obviously Costa Rica did get it together, had a much better defensive performance. I mean, I think halftime stats were something insane. Like, Canada had like 17 shots, and by the end of the match, it was like literally like 35 to like 4 or something like that by the end of extra time. But, you know, for Canada, Evelyn Vien gets the winner in the 104th minute, technically in the first. I believe that's still the first period of extra time. And, you know, then Canada, found a way to eke it out. Even though at the very end, Costa Rica had another chance to get the equalizer. And honestly, I was kind of rooting for it. Like, I was just, like, kind of rooting for it. Because at that point, I was like, producer out. I was like, my bridge show's, there's no bridge show. I was like, this took, I was like, we're literally about to go to the next game. I was like, let's just go to penalties. Like, let's just have maximum chaos. But yeah, that Kaylin Sheridan save, because Costa Rica was so close. And I almost tweeted it, and then I was like, let me not jinx them. That they were so close to the smash and grab, and the fact that they had that opportunity right before the end. And I was also like, I mean, fantastic save by Sheridan. But I also like rewatched it, and I was like, good placement would have been a little better. Am I being a little mean? probably a little bit of both.
I think you're being a little mean.
And I was like,
because she was so close, it's almost like you just hit that with enough power, and a goalkeeper doesn't get to it. It doesn't really matter. Well, so I was.
I know it's also
a hell of a save.
It was like you toe poke this literally anywhere else, and Sheridan doesn't get to it. But it's like the one spot where she just like manages to get a foot out. But yeah, that was an absolutely fantastic save, and also like I think previously because we had seen Sabrina D'Angelo for Canada, people kind of started assuming like she would be Canada's number one, and Caitlin Sheridan was like, no, it's still me. I'm the new Minister of Defense for Canada.
I just was like in awe of that save. I just honestly do not know how she did that, because it was Cat-like good reflexes. Build up too from Costa Rica, and so you know the ball like changed.
Cooked the
defender. They were cooking. They cooked, right? And it was like the ball changed multiple angles, and she had to react at the very last minute, and the player was like right in front of goal. That shot does not get saved. Maybe like I can't even say 9 times out of 10. Maybe like 14 out of 15. You got to bump up the probability even more, because it's just like that's always a goal, except this one time it wasn't. That was incredible.
I'm like 99 times out of 100.
I was trying not to exaggerate, but you know what?
I'm like, I think it's like anywhere between 98-99% of the time that shot's going in. And then it's just like absolute world class save. Like that is such a huge save.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
So Canada, we've been talking about them. They've been on a mission, a pretty clear mission, it seems, this Gold Cup. They've been using it the way I believe it should be used. A lot of younger players coming in, mixing with some of the older players, you know, like Ashley Lawrence played all 90, sort of Vanessa Gill, Khadija Buchanan, you know, so there's like some mainstays that played. Quinn started as well. So they played along quite a hefty chunk of minutes as well in the game. So like that did happen, but also they're mixing in some younger players, which is nice. I know I mentioned Gabby Carl, but still great to see her on the left from a spirit perspective. But I think my question really is like, if you're like Canada's been flying, so I don't want to like detract from the fact that they've played well, but I think they had like 39 shots total.
They could not find the back of the net. If it like they, at one point I was like, you could be standing on the goal line. Ball still not hitting the back of the net.
Right.
Which is also why I think if I'll come back to answer. Actually, I don't know if you officially asked a question.
But you can go because I was trying to build up to it, but I was like, how am I going to ask this? So you go ahead and I'll figure it out.
I was like, wait, there was not a question in that. I mean, Canada, unfortunately, it was like a combination of two things, right? Like, I think Canada was wasteful with their chances, but also I do think that Costa Rica's goalkeeper had. And so that it had a huge performance. Like, she was an absolute brick wall. I actually will say, and I don't know, again, if this is me being a little hypercritical or not, but over the course of that match, and I think one of the reasons why she was so good at disrupting Canada, especially off corners, set pieces in the air, is she was repeatedly off her line. Like, just always coming off her line, immediately trying to go for the ball, not doing the thing that I think sometimes we'll see with goalkeepers where if they... like, they either get stuck in two minds and then don't move, or they just decided, you know, stay on their line and try to make a save. But also, like, to me, that's almost like 50-50 of, you know, like, do you take the chance of trying to take the save or, like, you know, try to go and attack the ball? And so the way Canada scored was, it was actually kind of wild where, you know, it was a foul basically right in the center of the park, like almost in the center. And so,
yeah.
You don't often see a lot of free kicks being taken from that, probably about 10 yards outside of the 18. And so I believe it's Jesse Fleming. It's like kind of like a flat ball over the top that, to be fair, Evelyn Bien gets an incredible flick on it to get it to the back of the net. But it ended up just kind of being a weird pattern of play. But also, in that moment, that was, like, the one time all game that Soleta did not come out and try to get the ball first and attack the ball. And in the back of my brain, I'm like, if she just continued what she'd been previously doing, which had been really successful at disrupting Canada and making sure they don't get to the back of the net, does Canada score in that moment? because it's all like, because I think it'd be different if maybe like the ball was basically not right central in the middle of the field and was maybe out on either wing, and you know, you had like a sick curler in or something with like a great amount of like, you know, whip on it and a lot of power and stuff. But that like really was not the ball that ended up getting sent into the box that Evelyn Vian gets her head on. And so I wondered, like, oh, should she have just come try to get the ball? Even get, like, a, you know, even if she doesn't get it, like, a hand to it, something, like, something to disrupt Vian or the other, or the other Canadian forwards at that time, try to go and just get the ball and, like, you know, kind of see what happens. If you get scored on, you get scored on, but also you did get scored up, get scored on regardless. And, like, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but that was when I was, like, rewatching, well, when I was watching that game in real time and saw the goal go in, but also when I, like, went back to kind of refresh myself, I was like, oh, I kind of wonder if she should have tried to come out and get the ball.
Yeah, I watched that back, and I think the you're probably right, though, in terms of, like, the central aspect of it, like, trying to figure out the depth and, like, what can happen. Like, when it's an angle, goalkeepers really, like, that's stuff they train for. Even, like, before games, it's just part of, like, pregame training for goalkeepers. They just balls get hit in, you know, from deep crosses, and they just work on angles, coming out quickly, collecting the ball. And so maybe it was just that it was so central that it caused a little bit of hesitation. And then ultimately she decided to stay on her line, which, you know, once you hesitate, especially with the placement of that, I think it was a wrap, because if you hesitate and then you try to go, you're never going to get there. And then she's basically heading it over you, and it's going to look like it's going to look even worse. But she stayed on her line, but still, the header was good, and the indecision did kind of help Vian be able to get the ball in. My question to you, though, was going to be about Canada has scored a lot this tournament, and a lot of their players have racked up goals, like Adriana Leon scored a bunch of goals, Chloe Lacoste got in some goals, Jordan Heidema only has a couple goals, but I was just wondering if turns of like, you know, I like the approach, so I'm not saying I don't like the approach, but when you need a goal and you've played kind of this open style where the goals just kind of come from wherever they come from, does that kind of mess up when you like need a goal to figure out what do you do next? Because it almost seemed like they were like, save us, Adriana Leon. Like, you scored a hat trick before, do something. And it didn't really work. Same thing, Chloe Lacoste, like, y'all get in there and do something. And they weren't able to really do it. And I think maybe that's just kind of, do you think that's like a growing pain or maybe something that Canada still needs to work out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could go either way. Like, and honestly, I mean, I know we said this last episode or maybe the episode before when we were talking about the group stage just more generally, that unfortunately I think it also just kind of speaks to the quality of the group that Canada was in. I know we're going to talk about Paraguay later, but like, I don't know, it's kind of hard because I don't think, like, two things happen. I don't think in the group that they faced any team that was like, we're just going to sit back and low block you and like make you try to figure it out. And then on the flip side of that, like, you know, because those teams were either sitting in a mid block or even at times were like trying to press or even stay high on the pitch, like that also because, you know, a player like Chloe Lacoste, and I would actually say this for Leon too, like work really, really well when there's space, like when they have, especially with a player like Jessie Fleming in the midfield, you know, being able to basically like manipulate the opposition into going to like certain defensive formations, etc., to be able to, you know, or even just playing like quick one touch football. Like, I know one or two of Canada's goals literally just came from like Jessie Flint. Like, it was just like literally three passes, and all of a sudden you're in the opposition's boss like box, and then, you know, you're crossing it in or cutting inside and curling. So I feel like, so I don't know if that's an exact answer to your question, but I do think it comes from the opposition that they played earlier on in this tournament, in that, like, I'm not super surprised in that they were playing this free-flowing football, and when all of a sudden it stopped working, and it's not saying they weren't getting chances, just that they quite simply did not have their finishing boots on, except for Evelyn Vian's head, apparently, like, that they weren't able to, like, problem-solve, because also at a certain point, like, you know, if you shoot the ball 30, almost 35 times and you have double-digit shots on target and you still can't find the back of the net, like, almost at one point it becomes like, today is just not your day.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I do, like, I don't really think I have a definitive answer to it. I think I just want to continue to see Canada, and obviously we're going to preview the semifinal match they have because it's going to be kind of a banger. But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see them continue to grow and develop. But okay, let's move on to the other semifinal, or it's not semifinal, apologies, the other quarterfinal. Brazil 5, Argentina 1. Goals. Yaya opened the scoring. Yasmin got on the goal. Gabby Nunez scored. Zanarato, 2 goals, 54th minute, and in stoppage time, which honestly, that stoppage time goal was hilarious because, like, I think Brazil probably had, like, five, like, they were trying so hard to score, and I'm like, the game's like 4-1, like, y'all are gonna win. But they were, I wish I had access to the full stats because it felt like they had like multiple shots on goal. They probably had like an XG number combined that was close to 1, which is something that some teams do over the course of a whole game, and they just did it in stoppage time. They were going hard for that 5th and finally got it. Celeste Dos Santos got a goal for Argentina. Finally, Chip Luciana, which was just...
She'd been fishing.
Home gonna at happen at some point, the way she was wilding. But, like, honestly, I think the big story here is Brazil. And the thing for me about Brazil, and I know Zanarato got 2 goals, and so, like, she's definitely been a key player. But I think the big thing for me about Brazil and these performances is it's not the regulars.
These are players that, like... It's been a heavily rotated
side. Yeah. This is fun.
Yeah, I completely agree. Brazil just makes me laugh because sometimes it's just like you're going to get what you're going to get. Like, they got 3 out of 3 out of the group stage. And, you know, while they... I don't want to say they were troubled defensively, but, you know, while they, like, faced a very defensively solid... almost defensively, like, a stubborn defensively. Puerto Rico managed to get the 1-0 win. Go up, face Colombia, win 2-0, and then obviously banging a bunch of goals against Panama in their final group stage match. But everything that we've seen from this Brazil side, it's been heavily, like, a super rotated side. Something that actually, to be fair to, like, well, actually, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember off the top of my head if Canada has, like, really, really rotated in the same way that, like, the U.S. has rotated, but even in the same way that, like, Brazil has rotated, for example. Like, and... You know, I remember coming into this match and seeing the starting 11. I was like, what? Like, there's no Dabinha. There's no Adriana. There's no Ari Borges. There's no Jay-Z. And I was like, what are we going to get out of this Brazil side? And then they go and then they bang in 5 goals against Argentina. Like, and even though obviously it's still a big, like, it's huge regional rivalry. Between Argentina and Brazil. Brazil is unbeaten in all but one match that they played against Argentina, and it's a repeat of the 2022 CONMEBOL final, but also, like, when you have a player like Bia Zanarato, who got, I believe, 2 goals and 2 assists, clear player of the match, balling out, and they just, like, they're just going hard the entire time. And they're, I mean, to me, they're doing what this tournament is about, which is, like, rotating see who is working together, who isn't working together, but also at the same time, like, still wanting a really high level of excellence. Like, Dabinha literally didn't even come into this match. Nope. That's like, you have a well-rested Dabinha for your next match against Mexico. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun.
But you know what I think the great thing is about that and the way that Brazil has approached this? I wouldn't put a single dollar on Dabinha actually being in the starting 11 against Mexico. Because I don't know. The way that they've been doing it, I honestly don't know. I expected, like, might. To see a more veteran kind of lineup for this match, and that didn't happen. So, like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, I do agree. I also feel like maybe it's a bit of Brazil coming in and being like, I think before this match they had faced Argentina 17 times, somewhere in the high teens, and they'd won all but 1. So it also might be a thing of, like, while we know you, we also know we're unfortunately,
we know we're better than you, so
like we're like we're just 11. Gonna like yeah like object. I mean, truly, it's like a take this 11. I would be very surprised if like Brazil, like going into their net, like you know, going into the match against Mexico, isn't going to put out maybe an 11 that we're more familiar with. I'll phrase it that way.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I think this is the cool thing about this tournament is that you could really go one of both ways. Like they've gotten deep into the tournament. They were the only team before the U.S. did it that beat Colombia, and that was like a massive result for them. So like we said, like a lot of the players that are scoring and that are performing are not the usuals that we kind of expect when we see Brazil. And so it really does seem quite fun, and they could continue that approach. It's almost like what the U.S. ran into against Mexico. Do you continue this approach or do you go back to the veteran players? And it'll be really interesting for me to see what they do in the semifinal. But the last note I really wanted to like talk about Brazil and then ask you like if you had anything else was just like, juxtapose how Brazil balled out versus what we were just talking about with Canada and them struggling to score. Because what Brazil had 25 shots, 12 were on goal, on target, and they scored 5 goals. And Canada struggled to get 1 from damn near 40 shots on goal. So like, just note that that's kind of the case. But also, but I know I said I had one thing, but the other thing I did want to talk about is Brazil's style. I really love how they hunt to get the ball, and they're once they turn it over, they're very quick to just move it within each other because they press in numbers. And once they get the ball, one of them gets the ball, it's not like they spread out or move. They all just kind of knock the ball around, and then they're all of a sudden able to either drive forward or find a pass wide to somebody running in. Like they have these elements that are really, really cool and really suit how they want to attack anyway. So I always thought like, especially at the World Cup, the best Brazil was when they were pressing in numbers. And we're seeing them do that again and more frequently. And it leads to a lot of fun and a lot of quick ball movement that is just like, so it's so damn fun to watch.
Unless they decide not to make the final pass too.
Well,
yes, I'm sorry. I can never forgive her. I can't forgive her for that. The passes, I'm never letting them go. I saw them in person. I'm never letting them go. No, but the funny thing about Brazil too is that like it's funny they've dominated virtually all of these games, but also there are times where I'm like, Brazil, girl, get it together defensively. Because there have been moments where I'm like,
they are open.
Either like lazy passes. I mean, we just mentioned their goalkeeper going fishing. Been attempted chips several times. This was the one that went in. And so they're also,
one of those was super early too. Like Argentina could have gone up 1-0, right? One of those was super early.
Argentina could have went up 1-0 pretty early. I wasn't rooting for it, but I was also like, ooh, if this happens, like, this is going to be an interesting test for Brazil, and I'm curious of how they, like, cope to it. But yeah, it's like, kind of with Brazil, sometimes you're just going to get what you're going to get. Like, you're going to get those absolutely fantastic team goals that we all love and celebrate, or, like, beautiful curlers and stuff like that, but also there's going to be times where you're like, I don't know how you haven't conceded 3 goals, too. So I'm curious, like, now when they go up against a team like Mexico, who I would say for the most part are a bit better finishers, like this Mexico-Brazil match is actually to me going to be the one that's significantly more fun because you have your sharpshooters of Mexico versus your sharpshooters of Brazil, and both can give up goals, and like sometimes they're tap-ins and sometimes they're worldies. And so the two of them coming together is maximum chaos, truly. And I'm deeply excited for it.
Same. You know what? Good segue. Let's talk about the other quarterfinals next. So you talked about Mexico and the way that they roll. And this was another game in which, even though they had me a little scared in the second half, because for some reason they just decided to let in a couple goals, and they ended up needing that third goal from Ovalle to go in and get that win. But it was a very good win. I still think it was a good, at least offensive performance from Mexico. They beat Paraguay 3-2. Ovalle had a brace. Luna scored as well. It was a deflected half volley. But listen, this is why we say shooting is not like just because it's a low XG chance doesn't mean that there's not a hell of a lot of things that can happen. Brazil had a deflected banger as well in their game. So, like, I'm just saying, I want to see, not to, again, not everything goes back to the U.S., but I want to see shooters shoot. I want to see shooters. I want to see
All roads lead back.
All roads lead back. But Paraguay did almost get into it. 2 second-half goals, Barbosa in the 64th and Rebecca Fernandez in the 71st. And, yo, honestly, towards like the end of the game, I really thought Paraguay was going to do it. I thought we were going to extra time.
Andre, you also forgot. Paraguay had a saved penalty. PK at the very end of the first half. Double saved by Mexico keeper. This is the one time I will allow myself to be critical. That was a terribly taken PK.
It was.
It was atrocious.
I feel like there had to be like a lot of pressure on, because I was like, that's something else. That's not just like they'd played too well too. And like that was, to me, that was nerves. That was pressure.
Yeah, because I was like, you did not choose either corner. It didn't seem like you hit it particularly hard, and it seemed like a very easy save. No PK saves are easy saves because you have to choose the right way and all that stuff and keep it from the line or whatever. However, of PKs that I expect to be saved once they're struck, that was a high probability of being saved. But yeah, to me, this match was, I mean, it was really fun. Any 3-2 match is really fun. And yeah, for Mexico, I think it did bring up more questions and answers, especially towards the end of that match where, you know, Paraguay was obviously on the front foot, even though Mexico at one point was 3-1 up. And it's like, you know, this seems like a very, like, there are ways you can eat, like, not easily, but like close out this game that are more calm than, for example, letting in another goal and then kind of having a sprint to the finish. Especially towards like the end of that half, it was like, you know, seeing misplaced passes, like sloppy passes, like a lot of like giveaways and things like that, that, you know, really put Mexico, like, I was a little shook for them at a certain point. But also the funny thing is on the flip side, like, they'd have like a really nervous defensive moment, but then immediately go on the offensive and then almost score. And so it's like it's kind of like Brazil a bit, where it's just like truly a tale of, not a tale of two halves, but like you're going to get what you're going to get. Like, you're going to have sometimes really, really good moments, and you're going to have super shaky moments as well in the back. But yeah, as the time was winding down, I was like, oh, I think Paraguay can 100% get a third goal and we're going extra time.
I agree, although I will say my read on that was really like Mexico had their signature win in this tournament, no matter what happens, is going to be the game against the U.S. That really like kind of accelerated their belief in the project and what they're building. But they're still not a complete team yet. And part of that is learning how to control a game. And I think that's what game kind of showed, that they struggled to kind of like just kill this game. They had a lead and they let a team get their way back into it. And then we're really, by the end, we're just kind of holding on and hoping that third goal wasn't going to come from Paraguay, because if it would have gone extra time, I think it's a coin flip. One thing I'll say, though, that I loved watching is that, yo, I'm absolutely here for Pelayo and her energy, because the thing that was very funny about Mayra Pelayo is that she scored that banger against the U.S., which to me is goal of the tournament. Like, it's going to take something super special to beat that. And she was like, yo, I'm going to try to score that goal about 5 more times. And I kind of understand it. Like, I'm here, because once you get that feeling once, you're like, I want it again. It ain't the eat, like, that's one of those goals where you talk about like the chance that Kaylin Sheridan saved, where it's like 99 times out of 100. This is one of those where it flies in the top corner like that from that distance with that curl, maybe like 2 or 3 times out of 100. But she was going to try it. And I respect the energy, because she just kept on doing it. But ultimately, like Mexico still has like the energy that they have with those wingers, putting in the ball, not being afraid to, if you give them any bit of space. And I think that's really their danger is, and we see that in Liga MX Femenil. We try to tell people, you give these players any lick of space around the box, any one of them going to put their foot through the ball and test your keeper. And It's just fun to watch.
What you were saying about like Mexico at its core is still kind of a growing team and basically need these moments to learn how to close out games, I completely agree with. Because also, even though it's funny because it's like, I also feel the same way about like Paraguay. Like while they were also surging forward, they were A, giving up huge chances at the back that like Mexico was either going wide or like forcing Paraguay's goalkeeper into like an absolutely massive save. But they're also a team, like, I think about their road, you know, their almost road to the World Cup this past, or in 2023, where, you know, they have this, they have these huge performances at CONMEBOL, you know, make it to the Intercontinental Playoff. They did get through the first round, they won on penalties, but then didn't get through, like, past the second one to make it to the Women's World Cup. And while I didn't necessarily see, like, shades of that, like, here per se, I did see shades of, like, oh, this belief can bring us along, but also we, like, right now we maybe don't have all of the pieces we need to kind of cement it and kind of come together. It's like a, you know, a full 90-minute performance. Because there were times, like, especially in the first half, talk about Pelayo, she got an assist, I believe, for Jackie Ovalle's first goal. And yeah. So... it's like, there were also moments where, like, Mexico was 100% dominating, and I was like, oh, Mexico is going through in flying colors, like, this is going to be a, four, you know, 4-0 game easily. And then Hernandez gives, like, a crazy PK. Like, that PK that, you know, the goalkeeper ends up saving, but, like, I don't know if you saw that foul, but I was like, oh my, that is one of the most textbook PK, like, penalty fouls I've seen in a long time. And, you know, that might have just also been, like, a moment of either switching off or being a little bit nervous because, you know, we've seen Mexico's goalkeeper come up big time and time and time again. And so, yeah, like, look, this Mexico-Brazil match is going to be fun. Like, I hope I don't jinx it, but I, like, very much expect a ton of goals because Brazil can score goals and Mexico can also score goals on both of them. Mexico a bit more than Brazil, we've seen in this tournament, give up goals too.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this one. I think when we talk about the semifinals in a bit, like that's honestly going to be like that's one that I think I'm going to have to record that one because I want to watch it like multiple times. I'm expecting a banger for that one. But okay, let's move on to the last quarterfinal match. The U.S. Women's National Team had to bounce back after that massive L versus Mexico, and they did 3-0 over Colombia, which was a bit shocking,
very surprising. We predicted otherwise.
This is absolutely true. The goals, Lindsay Rand had a penalty kick, converted penalty kick, a PK in the 13th minute. Jenna Neiswanger had a banger of a left-footed shot, kept it low, straight, like that's just perfectly placed, and from the volley that she had to take with it, like it's just exceptional. That was in the 22nd minute. Jaden Shaw got the link up from Trinity Robin just before the half. It was 45+2. I believe there were 6 minutes of stoppage time, so it wasn't quite the final kick of the game, but it was one of the last impactful actions of the game because there were no more goals. It was 3-0 at halftime. It was 3-0 at full time.
There were chances.
There were definitely chances.
There could have been more goals for the U.S. and they were unable to.
There could have been more goals for the U.S. and there could have and should have been goals if it wasn't for Uncle Nair turning back the clock. There absolutely would have been a Colombia goal or two in that first half.
Was it Nair turning back the clock or was she actually playing with a solid defense and a mostly functioning midfield?
Maybe because that was it, but also like I watched enough of her at the Red Stars to see her like in position to make saves and just not make the saves.
Yes. So, but are you talking about mostly from last season?
I mean, past couple seasons, if I'm being honest, like it hasn't been great in the league. And so, and I think the numbers kind of bear that out when I look at like the data of kind of her in NWSL competition. The positioning hasn't been great. So that's been a part of it. And some of that is trying to overcompensate for not having a lot of faith in the defense. But some of that is like the ball's here and this is a save you would normally make and you just didn't. And so that's also been happening, but didn't happen in this game.
Yeah. The only reason why I don't call it vintage is previously in like thinking even just purely at the last NWSL season that the Chicago Red Sox had, it was for Nair, you got one of two extremes. You either got, like, for example, her making a few mistakes and letting in a goal or two as a result, or she was a brick wall. Like, I'm not joking. Like, to me, there was, like, barely any in between those two extremes. And so that's why, like, for me, I'm like, oh, this is, it's, like, not an actually vintage Nair performance, because I was like, I've seen her do this, like, even very recently. But yeah, obviously, kudos to her. Andre, I know we disagree that I was like, I 100% think Nair should be the number one keeper for the team. Also thinking about, I mean, we're saying play the kids, but also you need some chaperones and maybe someone to help, like, and also I think help bring a calming presence and kind of calm, cool, collected. Like, I don't know, my brain goes back to, unfortunately, the World Cup where the U.S. gets knocked out and that penalty. Like, not only, I'm not the penalty that Nair saved, but, like, even her just, like, setting the tone for that with that penalty she took, I'm like, that's your number one. She's going to bail you out, like, especially for the U.S. She's 100% going to bail you out more times than not and has, you know, the experience. Like, she got it. This was her 100th cap performance, which is kind of insane because she was, like, been on the national team for 15 years. And I'm like, that's wild. So yeah, I like 100% think she should be the number one. Like, not only off that performance, but also I think when you have more and more rotation throughout the lineup and, like, you know, people coming in, people trying to figure stuff out, having just your goalkeeper who is extremely solid 85% of the time is kind of the way to go for it. But yeah, I mean, the U.S. won 3-0. I can't lie. I was a little bit surprised because coming into this match, I was like, I'm shook. And I will say, the first big chance of the match was by Colombia.
Yeah.
Happened before the first U.S. goal. Linda Caicedo. So, for some reason, gets the ball. No one is close to her. And Andre, you heard my voice note about this. Because I was saying something about something else, rewatching this game. And then you hear me go, oh my god, Caicedo. How is she in all that space by herself? And a listener actually has to make a big save on Caicedo's shot. But I mean, I think the U.S., like, a lot of the things that I had questions about when it came to not only leadership on the pitch, but also, like, the mentality of the U.S. kind of heading into these games of, like, you know, finding a way to, like, play together and problem solve together and all of those things. Or, like, even, especially coming off the Mexico game, like, at times, like, their attitude of like, overly complaining to the ref, all that stuff, etc. Was, to me, like, I don't necessarily have those questions anymore, besides the fact that this match was actually a cage fight. It was a cage fight on a soccer field, because that referee, and I tried to not go super hard on referees, but that referee was absolutely atrocious. Like, not for even the reasons why. Right. And, like, not even for the reason of, like, people getting mad about, like, should have Trinity gotten a second yellow, which to me is borderline. Like, was that Alex Morgan penalty foul actually a penalty? I know people are focusing on shoulder to shoulder, but if you look her eyes down, she actually gets clipped on the ankle. And I was like, seen that given. That's, like, almost kind of textbook. However, I saw Sam Coffey get murdered. Lindsey Horan got murdered once or twice.
She sure did.
People Sophia were getting murdered Smith. All over the pitch. Sophia Smith got murdered.
She took also, it like a wrestling tag team move. Like, truly, she got, I thought, I was like, ooh, I don't know if she's getting up from that. So shout out to her. She did. But
also, I'm not going to lie, some of the Colombian players got murdered too.
It's true.
There were murders. I should stop saying murder, but it was like an extremely physical match, to the point where, especially if anyone goes back to rewatch it, you can, with some of these hits, you can hear the crowd reacting and people being like, oh, like, ah, and the game was not stopped.
I was gonna say, all. And you can see the players hesitate, like, oh, that's definitely gonna be a foul, and then the ref is like,
and then it's like, nah. play on. And like, and I remember it was crazy because at one or two of the moments, it kind of looked like the ref might have been playing a little bit of an advantage, but I was like, these are not advantages that you want to, A, they're not in the, they were like on the back line. I was like, what advantage is that? But also I was like, these are calls that you want to make early to, instead of giving out a bunch of yellows early, to prevent potentially like career season ending injuries that could result out of some of these tackles. Because I remember, like, it would happen, especially for, like, Sam Coffey, because I remember it twice where she just, like, would get clattered. And I'm like, she's dying on the floor 20 meters away, and no one's like, hello? Like, it happened with a Columbia player once or twice, too, and it was like, hello? Are you, like, gonna be safe and let these players, like, get looked at and stuff? Especially for some of them that, like, almost, like, borderline head injuries. I was like, what is going on here? So, yeah. The refereeing job was absolutely atrocious. Like, that is just, it was real bad with some of them, those tackles, collisions, etc., not getting called for fouls. Or yeah. Even, like, just, like, a player safety thing of, like, you know, maybe it was a 50-50, but both players go down. It's like, hey, let's stop the game and, like, make sure both of
them. That was another weird thing, is that she just didn't see, like, just assume that when collisions happen that there's no consequence or impact. Like, there's, like, right. Like nothing's going to happen. Like, they'll get up eventually, and it's like, yo, like, as the ref, it's your job to care about players, and part of that is when you see, like, a collision between two players and they both stay down, that you stop the game so that they can receive treatment or be checked on. Like, that's just a thing you do. And she was just like, nah.
Nope.
Just turned her back and kept running. And I was like, yo, this is wild. But okay, I have a my main question for you about this game, because I could talk about this game for a long time.
Honestly, so can I.
Because I like, this was somehow, it was like peak CONCACAF. It was like elite Comma Bowl, and it was like vintage U.S. Women's National Team, like all in one. So like, there's mm-hmm. so much to talk about here. But I think the biggest, my biggest thing, and the biggest thing I kind of want to talk to you about with this game is, why did Columbia do that? Like, I was a little frustrated because I was like, the lesson from the Mexico game wasn't that you can get under the U.S.'s skin. It's that tactically, if you set up correctly and use your width, use your wing players, and you press them,
it'll
they will
that.
Give you the ball. And you have similar type. I mean, you got Linda Caicedo. You have a player that can absolutely just change a game. Score that goal that Paleo scored. Like, she's done it before in the box, outside of the box. It's what she does. And I thought that Colombia kind of came in with a game plan to kind of unsettle the U.S., by doing kind of Comma Bowl type stuff, you know, not to generalize, but it was very much like, you know, you can find some of the clips where there was some like pushing and shoving in a wall, and then all of a sudden a player goes to the ground like, oh, I got hit. And it's like, we would look at the replay like, you might get hit. So like, and then like some of the other stuff, like, I mean, Trinity was on one. She was in the middle of every single
look,
squabble
we got
that
Epcot
broke.
Alex. I was like, Alex is about to fight someone.
Alex Morgan, like, which is like, hey, ain't seen you in a minute.
I was in my brain, I was like, does Alex have that mama dog? Is this something I've never seen from her before?
Right.
Because I was like, she was about to square up.
She did.
Columbia
she
captain,
did.
Catalina Usme, in like the seventh minute.
Yeah,
and I was
right.
Like, it was yo. It would be one thing if it was like, you know, it's a 1-1 or 0-0 and you need to get that goal and your emotions are rising. And it was like, you know, the 85th minute. It was like, no, this was minute number like literally 7. And I was like, yo. I was like, we are in for one. I was, the amount of times I was just like, fisticuffs.
Yeah, yes.
Fisticuffs are happening.
There were lots of fisticuffs moments. And I feel disappointed. I feel a little bit let down by Colombia because I feel like they didn't need to do that. I felt like, you know, the game, the way to kind of beat the U.S., like if you give the U.S. a reason to squabble and like to find their energy, to give them another reason to kind of up their intensity level by being physical and trying these things, that like, that's an easy route for this, for that team. Like these players, yeah, the team has been struggling, but there's still that deep, deep, deep hyper-competitiveness in pretty much every single one of those players. And if you make it easy for them, especially when, like, Rodman's on the pitch and she's just going to, like, get in the middle of everything, like, you just gave them the energy that they needed and kind of let them take advantage because they were up for the fight the whole time. If you just kind of like sit back, play your game tactically the way that Mexico did and find ways to kind of tweak and trouble the U.S. Because you talked about that Caicedo chance. That was confusion that worked. It was a tactical thing that actually worked. It was a wide runner. Rodman ran with the wide runner, and Emily Fox didn't realize that Rodman wasn't going to be following Caicedo, so she hesitated, and Caicedo, that's all she needed. She was in that pocket alone. Sam Coffey, the pass happened too quickly and beat out Sam Coffey too, and so like they were trying between the three of them to really always stay around Caicedo, but all it took was one overlapping run, and it created space, and I felt like if they would have kept doing stuff like that, it could have been real bad, but for some reason, the game plan was just all wrong.
That's actually not even the chance I was talking. Well, sorry, that was the first chance of the match. The chance I ended up sending you the voice note about was literally three passes. Emily Fox did not know what to do because there was not, in this moment, I actually think I sent it. No, this was not the one I sent a screenshot about. It was literally three passes. Linda Caicedo had tucked inside. For some reason, Emily Fox did not step. Naomi Garmer did not step. She was like, Caicedo was literally in between the two of them, and they both gave Caicedo space, which is like the number one thing you don't do. And so Caicedo has space on the ball. And she's like, oh my God, I have space on the ball. And then goes and also forces Nayer into a huge save. The first chance of the match that Colombia has, Caicedo does go wide, cuts in, and then basically sends the ball into the box to the on-running. I believe it might have been Usme, actually. Yeah, and Nair is able to, scary. Like, yeah. That was, like, the first true chance by either team in the match.
And it was just a poor touch by Usme. If she controls that ball, that's a goal.
Exactly. And so, watching this match, obviously I was disappointed with Colombia for a few reasons. One, I think that they maybe thought that Mexico being physical unsettled the U.S. what unsettled the U.S. was the high press. Yeah. And then the U.S. started panicking when they're like, hey, our normal things that we normally do are not working. It wasn't like the physicality and stuff like that, because the U.S. has played a physical game before. Like, and then you add the physicality on top of that, and that's when, like, the true frustration happens. But, like, even if you take out the physicality, the U.S. was frustrated regardless in not only the way they were playing and the way they had been pressed.
Or if you score first, right? Mexico, they scored, and then now you get a chance to like really cause some problems.
Because right, that's
now
where you have
something
Conmebol-y.
To protect, or you have an advantage.
Right, and so it was interesting, especially because I did a lot of research into this Colombia side, like coming into specifically into this match, and hearing from some of their former players, and we had seen at times actually like Colombia this tournament high press and be really successful with that high press. And so in my brain, I was like, that's how they're going to come out against the U.S. They're going to press and press and press and then like find ways to either win the ball high, like get a high turnover and score from there, or like, you know, pressing, try to get either getting Linda Caicedo the ball, having Linda do something. Like there are ways you can kind of beat this U.S. team, especially with a high press. I was expecting them to do that, and they also did not do that, and it did resort to like a lot of like physicality and stuff like that, and I'm like, A, that does 100% play into the U.S.'s hand, especially when you have a player like Trini Rodman, or when Alex becomes Epcot Alex, and it's just like, okay, like this is what we're gonna do. And it was actually kind of funny looking at how these two sides played and how I expected them to play, because it was really, to me, it was almost like the U.S. took Colombia's game plan, because especially for those first 25-30 minutes of the match, maybe not full 30, maybe that first, like, 25, like, the first half, the U.S. was pressing. Both of those first two goals that the U.S., actually, technically all three goals the U.S. scored came from a high press. The first one of Alex Morgan winning that penalty was basically pouncing on a semi, not even a super sloppy, but, like, a little bit of a sloppy ball back, and obviously she gets bodied in the box, gets clipped on the ankle, you get a penalty. And then for that, like, literally for that, for Jenna Neiswanger's goal, they win the ball in the midfield, and then it's basically just, like, a looping ball from Naomi Girma over the top. Alex Morgan gets, to be fair, a sick flick on. Like, that flick was sick. And then Jenna Neiswanger pounces on it. And then for the final goal, they ended up scoring. and let's talk, and I want to have a conversation about that, say back in a moment. But the one time where Emily Fox was really on Linda Caicedo, because by this point we'd seen, and this is how you know things are going around for Colombia, right? Like, you're seeing Linda Caicedo drop deeper and deeper and deeper into the midfield, even at times close to the defense, to try to swing the ball out wide to try to get something going. And Emily Fox basically picks her pocket and then lays the ball to Trinity Rodman, who then crosses it, gets it across for Jaden Shaw. Also, fantastic run by Jaden Shaw. She makes her life, makes the defender's life very hard by basically staying on her outside shoulder. And then
she's very good at that.
So good at it. And then very quickly getting right in front of her to tap the ball in the net. Well, not tap the ball in a minute, but get a foot on the ball, goes in the back of the net. And so, yeah, I was definitely disappointed with Colombia, especially like as the game went on. And to be fair, I was giving Linda Caicedo a lot of props because I was like, her passing range is insane. Like, it's like she can hit you in so many ways. Like, even if it's not 1v1 and dancing her way around the ball and finding a way to, you know, create chances out of nothing. If she drops in deep, she had one of the most insane passes of this entire match where she splits the defense from like, like 10 or 15 yards into her own half. And I was like, yo, this is insane. That, like, that pass was insane. But to be fair, even despite that, and especially for the like that second half of the first half, Colombia is like really starting to grow into this game. They force Alyssa Nair into two huge saves. But really what I think was making Colombia a bit successful was just kind of the Sweden game plan that we saw back in 2021, where it was like, we're just going to like, we know your outside backs are not saying they're not true outside backs, but they're obviously offensive outside backs. They're not as strong defenders. We're just going to isolate them and try to get up around them, or for a certain point, like catch them sleeping. And then we're just going to make the most out of that. And that's what happened on almost the majority of Colombia's chances, unfortunately, of like, you know, either Emily Fox not stepping or Jenna Neiswanger, even though I thought she had an absolutely fantastic performance, like overall, like there was, you know, a few moments here or there where maybe she was caught sleeping, maybe caught ball watching, and like Colombia makes kind of something out of nothing. And so to me, those are like, that's still a question I have going forward, especially thinking like, obviously you cannot replace both of these players, but when you have a player like Casey Kruger on the bench, who is good going forward, like that's my thing too, because I feel like people kind of knock her on that. That she's not as good going forward. She's like more defensive. She's still good going forward. She got 3 assists in a Challenge Cup match when the Challenge Cup was still like mid-season. Like, she's still very, very good going forward. And she's solid on defense. Like, why? Like, that should be the best of both worlds for your fullbacks. Like, that's the best of both worlds. And to be fair, Casey Kruger had an assist this tournament to Alex Morgan. That looping ball that she had in the Argentina match. Like, that was a Casey Kruger assist. And I'm like, I don't know. I think once you, when you come up against a Canada, when you have a player like a Chloe Lacasse, for example, who is very, very good 1v1, you're not going to want to get torched by your, like, on the wing or having a player cut inside. Because you really, really wanted to go forward, but now you're basically leaving it up to Naomi Girma and Tierna Davidson, who both had great matches. And seeing the two of them come together, it's like very, very exciting for me. And probably one of the best matches we've seen Tierna Davidson have in a long time. But also, I'm like, if a team scouts you tactically, like that's your, can be your number one weak point. Unless you want to change formations and go 3 at the back and then instead have wing backs. So you have more cover for your center backs.
Yeah, so like, this is where I'm like caught in almost like two minds, because on one hand, like, the U.S. really needed this, you know, like I thought this was like beating Colombia 3-0 was not something that a lot of people predicted or expected before the match, especially given how the Mexico match went. And especially if you look at Mexico's game plan, you look at Colombia, you're like, okay, if Colombia does the same thing, it's going to be tough, which is why I was super surprised to not see 1v1 defenders in there like Crystal Dunn and Casey Kruger out on those flanks. I actually thought that was going to happen so that you can neutralize those threats and then just try to hold on and like build when you do get a chance to build through the midfield or along the wing. That didn't happen. And instead, when the lineup came out, I was like, oh, we about to have a problem. Because, like, I remember that whole, and I tweeted about this, you know, the Mexico match, they had Emily Fox come in like basically into the center circle as a like absolute a center midfielder. She was not a fullback in that game for the majority of the time. And that was scary.
Worked in Mexico's favor also.
That, it like, did. And that's what I was like, they probably won't do that exact same tactic, but also we know Emily Fox likes to roam a little bit and maybe she can get caught. And this is not the player you want to get caught in. So this is why I also think, like I said, caught in two minds, where I was a little, I still go back to being disappointed about at Colombia's game plan. Because as soon as they saw those fullbacks too, they should have said, okay, we got this. Like, I think the problem was what the U.S. tried to do and what they ended up doing quite well, except for a couple of those moments where they slipped and they were forced to kind of try to defend 1v1 and you had those errors that you talked about, but just press. And maybe that was the idea, because Nyswanger is good at being able to like press, get in the right space, kind of be in the way. Like if you kind of look at, I looked at a lot of her data recently for last season Juan Carlos Amoros' system. Like she gets in the way a lot, tackles, like interceptions. She knows how to break up play and she knows how to press. So she's very good at that. And Emily Fox, kind of a similar thing. And so maybe it was like the U.S., this is maybe the U.S.'s pressing fullback kind of lineup where, okay, we're just going to deny service and try to press and force high turnovers. And maybe that's how we can do it as opposed to just trying to defend. But like you said, I think you can do both, because I think Casey Kruger can press. I think she can defend 1v1 and I think she can contribute an attack. So I would like to see a bit more balance in that way. But I because it worked in terms of like the result, I get it. But I also think Colombia played into that, and that's the reason why it worked. I think if they could have isolated Nyswanger and Fox the ways that they were trying to do, especially if they could create that confusion, like I mentioned earlier, with a wide runner and Rodman wasn't able to help double up on Caicedo, and then Emily Fox was kind of trapped and didn't make the right decision quick enough. Like, that's how you get at that. And I think Colombia could have done that, but by the time they were kind of done squabbling and scrapping, they were already down 3-0 and it was halftime.
Yeah, and I mean, I will also say, like, the U.S.'s game plan was actually ended up becoming pretty clear to me. Nyswanger was that more pressing fullback. She had a bunch of interceptions over the course of the match. Emily Fox, I will say, for the most part, very much stayed home. Outside of that third goal where she just kind of popped in to do it, like, I didn't see, when I rewatch these matches, like, I know it's, like, 90 minutes or, you know, 90-plus stoppage time. It takes me, like, a long time to watch these matches because, like, I will watch them and then I'll be like, wait a second, what just happened? And I'll like go back and like, you know, seeing how like patterns of play are building up and things like that. Cause also it's almost like little puzzles on the pitch. So it's like, I just enjoy like rewatching it. And so like Emily Fox, I will say for like big parts of the match were really staying home. And like, it was very clear her task was like, stay on or near Linda Caicedo, stay super defensive. And it's like, we're going to let, you know, Nyswanger kind of roam up and down the pitch if we need her to, but I will say, like, also two things I also noticed from the U.S. that obviously went really well. One, they just let Lindsey Horan roam. They let her be a 10 that she wants to be. Yeah, I feel like that's a fair thing to say, that she probably wants to be a 10. Or at least that's oftentimes how her game kind of shows up, especially for the U.S. And they didn't really, like, necessarily, like, super force her to midfield the entire time. And I think that obviously it worked in their favor having Sam Coffey be able to play next to a player like Corbin Albert. I think just worked, and especially with the two of them playing in a double pivot at times, just worked really well. I thought Sam Coffey had a grande performance. She had a venti performance. But I genuinely thought that she played really well. I mean, Corbin Albert too, yeah. To me, it was a bit more noticeable with Coffey, especially coming off the Mexico match where, you know, I was seeing her, like, besides having just, like, little small things that I enjoyed watching of, like, especially when the match was starting to get really scrappy and she was, like, kind of, like, hopping over players with the ball or, you know, quick feet to get around sliding tackles and things like that. I was like, okay, Sam Coffey, purr. But also just she was getting, like, stuck into tackles. I mean, I mentioned that she was kind of murdered a few times on the pitch, but, like, she was getting stuck in, like, you know, running after a lot of balls. I would love to see her heat map. I bet she covered like a ridiculous amount of ground. But that also allowed her to flourish because she had a partner next to her in Corbin Albert, who was doing a lot of the same thing as well, or just like, you know, out, like not only just like outlet passes, because even though I will say the two center back, like with Tierna and Naomi, did have actually surprisingly like a lot of balls over the top that I kind of noticed as like after the first kind of 25 minutes of the match kind of progressed, which I was like, for the U.S., I think in these moments you kind of want to keep the ball maybe a little bit better, as opposed to using Alex Morgan as a target forward, which is the other thing that I think surprisingly worked really well of Alex. It was clear that Alex Morgan had like just a general height advantage for most of Colombia's defense. And while it didn't work necessarily the entire time, I do think like the having her come in to be a target forward worked for this match. Will it work for every match? No. But do I think the instruction she was given to A, kind of lead that press, which we did see her do, try to be a target forward, I think it 100% worked out for this match. But I'm also not saying do that every match. Because I will say the squad overall, I think, just had obviously much better performances and were playing more together as a team. Seemed like the game plan was also, while it wasn't necessarily like less tactically complicated, I think maybe it was just communicated a bit clearer, and there were some, you know, key changes made to make sure that essentially that the U.S. doesn't get in their own way. So yeah, like I know I started out with a bit of the negative. I do think the U.S. it was a vintage U.S. performance of just like it was just like an ugly win, and sometimes wins are ugly, and you know that is the way it is. But they also like 100% got the job done. Like for like thinking about Colombia, like the only players who I think, you know, maybe played well was Linda Caicedo, but also at the same time, one time I looked up and I was like, Linda, why are you 5 yards in front of your 18-yard box and you're trying to get in and distribute? Because you were having a coffee swarming or a Corbin Albert swarming, getting in there. Even at times, like, when Lindsey Horan was around to float and press, kind of press how she wanted to. I don't want to say press as she wanted to, but, like, you know, I think just not, like, basically, I think the Lindsey Horan we saw was the Lindsey Horan we often see of Lyon, where, like, Lyon is extremely dominant and can just keep going forward over and over again, and Lindsey isn't necessarily asked to kind of sit in a six, or even at times, or even, like, sit as, like, a pure eight, and she has allowed the freedom to go forward and do all of those things. It really worked out. And the last thing, sorry, I know I said two things. The third change that I think worked really well was letting Jaden Shaw cook in the way Jaden Shaw likes to cook. She was able to pop off that back line and get into those pockets, get into those seams in the midfield, and turn and create. And it worked really well. Because you let Jaden Shaw be Jaden Shaw, which, like, obviously, well, she's gonna be Jaden Shaw.
But this, like, is why I want Jaden Shaw at the 10, but I'll talk about that later.
I completely agree why she should be at the 10. But I do think, like, of a... Maybe, like, to me, she basically served as a 10, even if it was at times informally. But also, I think, like, maybe that is the tactical tweak where they're like, oh, at times we want Jenna Neiswanger to get high and wide to kind of occupy the outside back. So that way Jaden Shaw can pop off. She's able to basically get the ball, turn and go, which we saw a few times this match where I was like, ah, yes, this is very nice. And the last thing I saw, I don't know if you picked up on this too, they were doing what we've seen Colombia do, where they will... Someone, they don't necessarily invert inside, but someone will come inside and then very quickly switch the ball. And it didn't happen. It didn't come off the entire time, but I was like, that seemed like a concerted effort thing I had not previously seen from the U.S. of like, oh, we were very quickly trying to do this, try to switch the ball, which to be fair, I also feel like happened maybe a tiny bit more in the second half than the first half, but those are a lot of my thoughts. They've been bubbling all day. All the things have been bubbling all day. But this U.S. versus Canada match is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, you know, I do think you said something interesting there as well in terms of talking about Emily Fox's role. I think that the U.S.'s third goal was probably created by the fact that Caicedo was dropping so deep, and I think that's why Emily Fox was on her.
Oh no, that it's high, 100%. No, yeah. That is 100% what it was.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the semifinals and also Cat. We're going to run through this pretty quick because, you know, as expected, the games were dope and we had a lot to say. So these things happen. But
also, we kind of previewed them while we were talking about the quarterfinals too.
Correct. But I do want to give people update on the semifinals, which are coming on Wednesday, March 6th. They're going to be at Snapdragon Stadium in San Diego. Brazil and Mexico are the first game. CONCACAF thought they were slick. Switch those around right quick. But Brazil and Mexico are the first game at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then Canada versus the U.S. Women's National Team at 10:15 p.m. Night Owls unite. I love it. I love it. Courtney, both games feel like they're going to be bangers. Canada, U.S. Women's National Team might not actually be a banger. That might be a little stale.
I hope it's like the 2022 W Championship final, where that match was a banger. Even though it ended up being 1-0 to the U.S., the actual quality of that match, banger.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and say I think you'll see more goals in the first game, but obviously every time we try to predict that, something else happens. So we'll see. But Courtney, what do you think? Your thoughts on both games and who you think is going to win?
I'm not going to say who I think is going to win because I haven't made it up in my mind. Honestly, it could, between Mexico and Brazil, it could literally be a coin flip. And it's whoever, I think whoever wins is whoever
has. Don't say that too loud.
Better.
Go get.
They're going to draw the lots. They're going to draw the lots. I think for that, it'll literally just be a toss up of who has their better shooting boots on. Like, it's just like, I mean, we just talked about it for like 10 minutes of how they're both really, really good going forward, but also can give up things in the back. And so I might edge Brazil a little bit, but also I'm like, Mexico, because of the quality of their shooters as well, can create something out of nothing, which is why I'm like, it's essentially a coin toss. For the US versus Canada, honestly, that's a little bit of a coin flip for me too. Canada has had probably the easier path coming into this match. But also, while they had an extra day of rest, they also played an extra 30 minutes of football. And yeah, I think it's going to come down to basically what we were just talking about of Canada's wingers versus US's outside backs, like of how they're going to play if Canada, which I at times expect them to do, is going to want to pin back the U.S. outside backs. That's also going to force the U.S. to play vertically, I'll rephrase, the U.S. to play more centrally, which is not something we've necessarily seen them do a lot or often, especially really post Sam Mewis. We haven't necessarily seen them do that. So, I think the match is going to be good. Obviously, there's a huge rivalry between them. So, Andre, I'm going to toss it to you. Who do you think is going to win out of these matches?
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one. I don't really know. I think if Mexico can get out of this tournament with wins over Brazil and the U.S., like, that's just, it feels almost too good to be true, given where they are in their project. So I kind of lean towards Brazil, and also because I think Brazil's been able to use more of their squad and get them more involved. So I think Brazil will be able to. The only thing that scares me about Brazil is, like we've talked about, they're pretty open. And I don't know what goalkeeper they're going to have, but I would probably not start Luciana because Mexico will score from the halfway line if she thinks that she's going to be able to roam about like that. So don't do that. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Brazil. But I'm super excited to see this match. I think with Canada and the U.S., maybe we'll see if our theory or at least my theory. I don't want to rope you into this because you haven't exactly said it. But I'm wondering if the theory will be correct in terms of the outside backs. Like, are we going to go with the same two and press, or are we going to look at more defensive backs? And are we going to see Crystal Dunn or Casey Krueger come back into the lineup? That's going to be interesting for me to see.
Crystal Dunn comes back, she better be right next to Sam Coffey in that midfield.
Yeah. And if so, I think it's going to be interesting to see what the game plan is. Like, are we still going to press, or are we going to kind of like play more reserved and cautious? I put on Twitter that I do honestly believe with all of my heart that a U.S. Women's National Team coach that does not press in games should serve jail time because these players, it's what they know. It's what they do. Our athleticism is still one of our biggest strengths. I don't care what people say. We have the ability to be technical as well, but we also are just own it. We are a super athletic team. Let those forwards go press. Let those midfielders press. Let those fullbacks press and make things happen. So I'm kind of hoping to see that, but I am a little shook because Canada has been quite good. And they have been, and especially it's going to be a bit of a style change too. I believe Canada's been in a back three most of the tournament and trying to deal with that and the width that creates and how they use it with their wing backs is going to be something for the U.S. to adjust to. They haven't had to see all tournament. So this one is the big coin flip for me. Neither one of the matches am I like know exactly what's going to happen, but like I feel very, very uncertain because there's so many factors in terms of lineup, style, tech, like what
there's a lot
who's gonna try
air.
And do what, like all of that stuff. I can't call it, so I don't really know. But man, do we think that emotionally the U.S. got a big enough boost from that Colombia game to like grind this out, or do we think like it's still gonna come down to like Canada, just even though they had an easy group, they've been balling so much that like they had a pretty significant emotional win too. I mean, stoppage time goal. So like, or not stoppage time, extra time game winner. So I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think we have to choose. Sorry, listeners.
Good.
It's just
going to
be open-ended. I'm just not going to. Because also, the thing is with both of these games, I can argue myself in either way.
Same. Like, that's the problem.
Like,
and I was just
literally
doing
Brazil.
That.
I'm like, what Mexico? I was like, how Paraguay got at Mexico at times. Yeah. Besides clever, like set plays, was also like really intricate play in the center of the park. That's how that penalty got called. Was just like literally quick passes. And I'm like, that's what Brazil does all the time. But also, Brazil's goalkeeper goes fishing, and so I was like, they can just hit bangers from halfway. You're right. Like far out. Yeah. So that's like,
you know what? I'm with you. This is our podcast. We gonna do what we want. We just gonna say watch the damn matches because they're gonna be fun.
They are going to be fun. So yeah, I'm not choosing it. I literally for both of them, I'm like, they can 100% beat coin tosses. I was like, maybe Olivia Smith comes in and starts balling out. I believe it. But also, what if they start Sophia Smith and Sophia Smith is like, hey girl.
Yeah.
I got a middle part bust down and a long hair.
Like, she's super ready to go.
She's super ready.
The other thing I'll say, though, is looking at both these matchups, we're guaranteed a banger for a final.
We are.
That's all. Like, we're going to get a banger for a final. It doesn't matter. Either we get a rematch of the U.S. and Mexico, or we get any other combination that's going to be dope. So, like, yeah, I'm excited about that. Okay, Courtney, it's time.
Also, all these teams have a lot of history together. And Canada and Brazil, if they make it, are also playing each other in April.
Yeah.
For She Believes.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot. So
all the options.
Okay. It is time. You know what? We're going to skip Heated because we're just going to Hyped.
I thought you were saying we're going to skip Heated and Hyped. And I said, Andre,
no.
I'm sticking on this podcast and we're talking about Katarina Macario.
No, we
back.
Are going to skip Heated because we are so hyped that there is no Heated that will enter. I'm sure that will change. And honestly, there are things I could say. But right now,
I'm still in Cat
Land. Today, it is all about Cat.
I have not left.
She came back. She made her debut after, 641 days?
641 days.
She stepped on the pitch for Chelsea, which, you know, we're both Chelsea supporters, so that happens. And she scored 6 minutes into her debut. Just like...
Shorter than Olympic minutes she got. Vlaco, I'm still never forgiving you. I'm bringing it up every single day. It's basically tattooed on my forehead at this point. I'm never forgiving you for this. However, she scored in the joy.
Oh my God.
Not only the joy on her face, but also the joy on everyone else around her.
Yes.
I'm like, look, I've never been in that environment. While I will say, me and my knee still beef every single day with me and my PT Mark. But like, I think especially when you're out for so long, and I can't imagine how tough it is seeing other players who have torn their ACL after you get back before you and like are back playing and all that stuff and having setbacks and, you know, like missing your first World Cup when like you could have just been on like on the edge of being able to make it back on time and having, you know, different setbacks and things like that. Because even I was looking back at like, you know, we saw Kat jogging and like last, like on grass, like last April or something like that. So we're like, oh, she, you know, maybe she could be back for the World Cup, you know, missing it, all of that. Like, and so not only to come in and get your debut, to get your immediate debut goal, joining her fellow countrywoman, Mia Fischel, and doing that on her Chelsea debut, but also it's just like the joy she had and the relief she had will just like feed me forever. And like, everyone coming up and celebrating with her, and like you could tell the joy on their faces too. And you know, Chelsea put out a great video this morning of obviously the goal happening and things like that, and then like everyone's like responses on social media of like her fellow teammates being like, I'm so proud of you, like I'm so happy for you, like Sam Mewis tweeted at her like, we're so happy for you, like I'm so happy for you. It just, it gives me a lot of joy, like just on like a personal level, like I'm just like happy for her to be back and to be playing. Because I cannot imagine what it's like also making, like, it'd be one thing if she was still at Lyon, but also making, like, a huge move in the middle of your recovery and, you know, having all those expectations put on you. Like, obviously, we have a lot of expectations for her, but they're all, like, positive. We're like, you're just going to kill it, queen. Like, oh my God, we're so excited for you to do something and our brain's exploding. But, like, it just gives me so much joy. And now Kat is back. And I was like, yeah, and I'm so close to saying those four words. I'm not going to say them yet because I want to give them time. Please to let do. Her like integrate into the squad. Yes. But like, I'm so close to saying those four words because y'all aren't prepared. Y'all are not prepared. Y'all are not. You are.
I just, no, for me, it's just like, it's real tears. Like, this has been a long time. I've said before on this podcast that like Katerina Macario has the chance, if obviously she stays healthy and all of that, but she can be my favorite player of all time. Like, she has that skill set, she has that ability, she is that exceptional of a player. She is so uniquely talented, and it really, really sucked to see her go down. Obviously, we've seen a million ACL injuries, but as Courtney said, it can take varying amounts of time to come back. And this was a long one. And so I just want to read, because Kat, like, she was rightly kind of overwhelmed. And I think all of the celebrations, post-match, the hugs, I mean, Emma Hayes, how long and how tightly she hugged Katerina Macario and talked about her being like she's a great person and that she's leaving the Chelsea with a world-class striker. Like, she was just like, I find like we've got her back now, and like she's so happy for her because she knows what she's been through. But today Kat posted about it, and I just want to read the whole thing because I think it's difficult, and this happens a lot of times with injured players and going through rehab and all of that, is that you may get like the IG story of them running in like, you know, the zero gravity bubble thing that they run in, all that stuff.
Alter like, G for the win!
Yeah, that thing. So you see like clips of that kind of stuff, but you don't really know what it means, and you don't know like how separated they are from their teammates. You don't like, it's a completely different regimen that they're on, and it can be tough. So Kat posted this on IG. This is her caption that she posted, which, by the way, she's also very funny, because the last slide in this was the Titanic has been 84 years thing. I was like, okay, so you're still clouding a little bit. That makes me feel better. But here's the caption. She says, after 21 months, 641 days, endless hours of rehabilitation, and many, many tears later, I'm so overwhelmed with emotions that last night still feels surreal. To say this journey has been the most challenging period of my life is an understatement. I went through so many setbacks, so many heartbreaks and doubts that I thought at times I would never be able to play football again. But last night made every single struggle and hardship worth it. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank Chelsea for never giving up on me, for supporting me in more ways than I could have ever imagined, and for giving me the opportunity to play the beautiful game again. A massive thank you to the fans as well for your love and encouragement since the day I joined. I feel so blessed to be part of this special team and club, And I can't wait to enjoy more moments like yesterday with you all. All glory to God. If you ain't crying,
my girl,
you ain't got a heart.
My like, girl.
I'm just delighted. I'm glad I'm overjoyed that she's back. I know that like this was so long coming, and like, I don't want to hear no U.S. Women's National Team talk. I don't want nobody to bring up the Olympics. I just let her get on the pitch. Let her play the game again. Let her grow that confidence in herself and her body. Let her contribute to whatever season Chelsea is going to have. If she comes back to like being Cat for real Cat and she's ready for that, yeah, we can have that discussion. But me, I just
will be feral. Just be prepared.
I don't care if she's just like 10 minutes a game for the rest of the season. I don't care. I just want her to take her time, continue to take her time so that when she's back and really back, she can be really back. But like, it happened. It finally happened. I lost my damn mind. I'm so thankful and happy for her.
I actually lost it. I was not prepared when she scored.
I definitely wasn't prepared for that. But I saw. But I'm telling you, this is why I love her so much as a player. If you watch her on that play, as it was developing, she slowed her run to stay in that pocket. And I was like, she's going to score. If Beaver Jones can find her, she's going to score. And that's the kind of stuff that she does instinctually. She hasn't been on a pitch in a competitive game in 641 days.
Over
and she
a
still
year.
Has that instinct to just
year
be like,
half.
Nope, the space is here. I'm going to stay here. Lefty control, lefty shot. She's so fucking good.
And she had, like, I was like, and she also had other tankers in the match too. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
She's such
a joyous player to watch.
She was really my everything at times. I was like, wow. The joy I'm currently feeling of having, she is very, very close to also being probably one of my most favorite players of all time. I'm trying to think of who my number one is. Well, I have a top three. Yes. But I'm saying Kat can very quickly and easily break into that top three. And yeah, even if it's literally 10 minutes match, 20 minutes match, she wants to come in and score a banger against Arsenal, that'd be nice, but
don't put those expectations on her.
I know.
Stop that.
She might not, I don't know. She might not even make the match. Anything is possible. Yeah, it's just like, it's just so great. And you can tell how much it means to her and how much it means to the rest of the squad. And that joy and lift, especially off like the, like, I don't think it can be divorced off the me official ACL injury as well. Like, you know, that has to be. And Andrew Coach leaving, like, that has to be so hard emotionally for the squad. And so, you know, being able to have that little small moment of joy of Kat coming back, getting a goal, Myra Ramirez being a grown-ass soccer player. She's a grown woman.
Even though, in another episode, we're going to talk about bias and refereeing again, but
yes, we
not
will.
Right
yes.
now.
Yes, we will. Always. But, yeah, it's just, I'm overjoyed for Kat. Everyone go play Overjoyed by Stevie Wonder. That's the two of us. I was listening to that song a few days ago. That's the only reason why it's at the top of my mind.
You know what? That's great energy to end the podcast. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that's perfect. Go listen to Overjoyed by Stevie Wonder. And Courtney, anything else or just the bye?
Andre has a new nickname. It's Wemby. Bye!
Jesus.
Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod. That's Diaspora UTDPOD. And message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.